Hello, and welcome to episode number 42 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Over 40 plus episodes of the Point of Convergence podcast, we've covered a broad assortment of matters pertaining both to the UFO phenomenon and related topics such as parapsychology, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, contact with non-human intelligence via endogenic means, and much more. We've also frequently framed these matters within a model that proposes that consciousness may be the underlying bedrock of reality from which all of the rest of the manifest cosmos arises. We've plotted various points of convergence as we've explored the remarkable ways the so-called contact modalities point to something fundamental about reality itself. A reality much more complex and interesting than the flatland version currently being offered up by reductionistic scientific materialism. And during the course of our journey, these various matters have sparked our collective curiosity, birthing additional questions. And of course, we should not be surprised by this. This field of inquiry is the deepest of rabbit holes, inspiring several new and thought-provoking questions for every point of semi-transparent clarity that is tentatively offered up. And in light of that, it occurred to me that now would be an apt time to turn the subject matter over to you, the audience. Inspired by that notion, this week's episode will be the first of a new recurring feature I'm calling the Inquiring Mind, which will incorporate a question and answer format. You ask the questions, and I'll do my best to respond in as thoughtful and complete a manner as I can. In terms of the questions put forward by you, this first edition of The Inquiring Mind certainly did not disappoint. The questions submitted were thoughtful and intriguing, and for that I thank you for your submissions. Today's topics include disclosure, mass trance, the origins of religion, prime contactees, zero-point energy, the nature of reality, and more. And now, without further ado, let's dive into the inaugural edition of The Inquiring Mind in this, the 42nd episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. All right, we've got numerous questions to get to, so let's jump right in. The first question, submitted by an audience member, has to do with religion. The question is, what are the likely responses of each of the major world religions to disclosure of the presence of an ongoing non-human intelligence here on Earth? Great question. I've touched on this in passing, more specifically in terms of Christianity, but much of what I will say here also applies to other religions, certainly to Islam and Judaism, for instance. Well, what I would say is, more so than religions, the question is really about the developmental levels within those religions. In other words, there is not one uniform Christianity any more than there is one uniform Islam or Judaism. There are many different versions of Christianity practiced, for instance, across the world. Even within the United States, for instance, one country, one nation, there are multiple versions of Christianity. And really, the way people practice religion and think about reality is an extension of their worldview. And that is true of how they practice religion, for instance. So take two different kinds of Christianity, Southern Baptist being a very conservative form that has a very literal view of scripture. What it says is what you should practice. There's no sense of context or history or how that might be different for different people in different eras. And you take something like a much more modern Presbyterian form, mainline kind of Christianity, which is much more really about humanitarian causes. There isn't a lot of religiosity at the root. In other words, in those particular forms of Christianity, you don't really even have to worship Jesus. You don't even necessarily have to think of Jesus as a historical figure who actually existed. Whereas in Southern Baptist traditions, of course, absolutely, the historical figure of Jesus is central. And not only that, but this view that Jesus is the only way to be saved and therefore to go to heaven in the afterlife. Anyone who doesn't fall under that salvation is doomed to go to hell. That is the basic premise of more conservative versions of Christianity, including Southern Baptists. Again, very different from the more humanitarian or mainline Christianity. So obviously, all that is to say, a group that is more on the progressive end, seeing that all human beings are connected, and even for those members of more mainline circles that do believe in an afterlife and those notions, there is this sense that there may be multiple ways to achieve that kind of union with God. Now, for those people, there already has been a process of an ever-expanding circle of inclusion to include other human beings, other cultures, other religions. So the notion of non-human intelligences will likely, while again, it will still be a shock to the system for many people, those more progressive ends of Christianity will be able to incorporate that new reality into their religion, because again, it's about ever-expanding circles of inclusion. Of course, for the more conservative end, where dogmatic views around human beings being the only intelligent species and all being fallen and all needing the salvation of Jesus to have union with God, this will throw a major wrench into the works. And this will be much more difficult for them to incorporate into their existing dogma. My point of view is generally there is not a lot of wiggle room here, as I've said before, because the views are very dogmatic in the most conservative strains of Christianity. Again, I'm talking about those ones specifically. And I think those specific kinds of groups will either change their view, in other words, abandon that particular worldview, that particular view of Christianity, and adopt a more modern one, a more progressive one, or they will conclude that these aliens must be demonic. As I've said before, they have a sort of three-tiered view of reality: God and angels in heaven, Satan and demons below, and human beings really being the only intelligent species in between. Again, that's not an absolute, but that's generally the view for the more conservative versions of Christianity. And for those people, they're very likely to either abandon that view after these new revelations come into focus, or they will view these others as demonic in nature. Demonic more than angelic, because again, they are unfamiliar, they're new, and often anything new is treated as underlyingly deceptive because of passages in scripture that have to do with Satan parading as an angel of light and that kind of thing. So UFOs and aliens will play right into this kind of thinking. In fact, even if these aliens show up and do good things and apparently help human beings, there will still be some who claim this is all a ruse and that this is all part of the Antichrist plan, that this is about human beings uniting under a one-world government aided by these aliens who are really demons in disguise, all in preparation for the arising of the Antichrist. That theology is much more concretized than many people realize. And even when there is evidence to the contrary, it will be interpreted in this way by many, many people in those most conservative religious circles. All right, on to question number two. In your opinion, will there ever be a mainstream acceptance of non-human intelligence / paranormal experiences? And if so, what will be the road that leads there? Is this realm esoteric by definition and not penetrable to study? Will there eventually form a consensus about its nature? Again, another excellent question. I would say progress towards acceptance of the reality of this aspect of existence is slow and sometimes unsteady. William James, the famous historian and philosopher of religion, said that progress is so slow and sometimes seemingly torturously so for those of us interested in this topic that we really have to gauge it not by the year, not by the decade, but by the century. He was referring more specifically to so-called psychical research, but much of this overlaps because we're talking about aspects of reality that extend beyond the parameters of physicalism and, again, the assumptions of reductionistic scientific materialism. I think Dean Radin is on the right track when he points out that these revelations don't mean that we have to throw away our textbooks, but rather simply we revise them. According to Radin's model that I discussed in a previous podcast, and I concur with these notions, by the way, consciousness, which currently sits at the top of the scientific pyramid, meaning it's dependent on everything below, In other words, it's only the chemical firings of a warm, wet brain that bring about consciousness from the perspective of scientific materialism. It needs to go from there and be moved to the very root of the pyramid. In other words, consciousness becomes foundational to everything else. Every other building block of the pyramid is added on top of consciousness. In other words, consciousness is not derivative, but foundational. Indeed, foundational to everything else that arises in what we call reality. In terms of what it takes, there is a saying that applies equally well in science and religion. Progress moves funeral by funeral. In other words, if you don't like the current state of affairs, funerals tend to do the trick. In other words, over time, perspectives change. In other words, views are often so rigid that only a changing of the guard will allow for truly new thinking to enter the fray. Indeed, even Dean Radin has talked about more of his papers being accepted into mainstream science journals now than when he began several decades ago, primarily because a new generation of editors are at the helm. Editors younger and less resistant to the notion that consciousness may indeed be more primary than the physical world. They are at least less dogmatically opposed to that notion. As I've said before, even the revelations of quantum dynamics are only barely being really reckoned with by the scientific establishment. It's kind of treated like its own little box of strange phenomena. So again, a long way to go. All we can take solace in is the notion that when you're a pioneer, you're always going to feel somewhat lonely. You're always going to feel definitely in the minority. And I think that applies to most of us here. All right, let's move on to question number 3. Despite the label of pseudoscience, are there any hypotheses regarding zero-point energy, or have you looked into it, and what's your opinion? So I would say a few things about zero-point energy. First of all, for those of you not familiar with this notion, it is often talked about in ufology, and specifically because the idea put forward by people like Hal Puthoff, that are very credible scientists, of course, that have been studying this for decades, is that zero-point energy could be a virtually inexhaustible part of our universe that you could draw from, and if you could, it would be, again, inexhaustible, basically free energy of a vast amount that you could use to power, for instance, starships, not to mention every power plant on the planet. Now, first off, while actually tapping into and making use of zero-point energy is still a somewhat controversial matter, zero-point energy itself is intrinsic and an unavoidable part of the notion of quantum physics. The zero-point energy has been theoretically and experimentally studied, and it definitely exists. It's one of the main implications of quantum mechanics that arose in the 1920s. So the zero-point energy is a very real physical effect. Another term for it is vacuum energy. And to give you a basic idea, we used to think of space as just that, empty space, there's nothing there. What we now believe, based on the implications of quantum mechanics, is that there is quantum foam, so-called, filling all of space, and that is vibrating, pulsating with energy, where you have virtual particles coming in and out of existence extremely rapidly, and this creates a sort of vortex of energy that can be tapped, at least theoretically. That is the idea. That is the very notion that people like Hal Puthoff have been trying to apply and come up with an actual workable model. Thus far as I know, there have been no major breakthroughs in terms of pragmatic, applicable technology. But again, the notion is very real. From my point of view, it's really a question of when and not if. Okay, now we're ready for question number 4, which has to do with the UFO phenomenon and the paranormal in general. This question is as follows. What are some alternative explanations to the trickster phenomena other than interdimensional teenagers? So first of all, that is, of course, one of the main hypotheses put forward, that when we see a supposed trickster kind of intelligence, and by trickster we mean it does things apparently that confuse us, that confound us, that seem to deliberately throw us off track sometimes, That's why one of the theories is that this may be a kind of young, immature intelligence, but of an interdimensional nature or an energetic nature rather than being a physical presence, and that it plays these pranks, basically, and that we experience this as what we call the trickster phenomena. That is one definition, one explanation for this behavior that we observe, this activity. Another one that I'm aware of, which is very interesting, and it's thrown around more in parapsychological circles, is the idea that our collective unconscious is actually manifesting this trickster phenomena. That, as many of you may well know, there are aspects of truth to do with who we are that our subconscious contains. And sometimes you get what is called shadow show up in strange ways in our experience because there is actually a mismatch, a incongruence between our conscious and our subconscious. Now, the idea is, in the same way, the entire collective human unconscious may also have a kind of subconscious, and that when we are becoming too arrogant, too committed, too concretized in terms of our perspective on reality, that something deep within our collective unconscious that knows this is off track raises up and deliberately throws wrenches into our experience, basically, our experience of reality, in a way to try and indicate to us that we are off track, that we are too committed to one particular view and are therefore missing larger aspects of the totality. That is another very interesting notion when it comes to what is behind this trickster phenomena that has been encountered and observed time and time again. There is also a third hypothesis that I'm aware of that's somewhat related to that second one. At least it's similar. This notion is that consciousness itself, or the life force, if you will, behind the cosmos, contains within it this kind of trickster phenomena that, again, serves that same purpose. It arises when it is trying to redirect us when we've come off course somehow. We experience it as this kind of trickster phenomena that seems confounding, confusing, seems like it's frustrating us, but its ultimate purpose is benevolent, that it's there to try and put us back on course or on a course closer to the truth. So of those different hypotheses we just discussed in terms of explaining potentially the trickster phenomena, the first one is a kind of just troublesome intelligence that is only there to try and frustrate us, that it gets its kicks effectively by frustrating us. The other notions we discussed are actually, while confusing and confounding, ultimately there to try and correct or rectify an overcorrection in our current trajectory. Okay, time for another question. This next question is worded as follows. It appears that certain people are obviously predisposed to seeing and recording phenomena. Notably, the Bledsoes, a person I follow on Twitter, Nikki Noel, and Dorothy Izett, of course. I have been a lay science, space, and astronomy geek from when I was very young. I am 61. And I have been gazing at stars, clouds, and aircraft all of my life, and I have never seen UAP, phenomena, experienced psychic events, or anything I could not easily explain. Why is it that these people can not only see these phenomena, but also record them? I feel excluded. Are these people just the Alma Deutschers and LeBron James of the psychic realm? Another fascinating question. Again, I could go in many different directions. For the sake of time, let me just go in a couple directions. Number one, this listener asked about, importantly, not just the fact that some people can see these objects and entities, but also that they sometimes can record them. Of course, we talked about that in the Dorothy Izett episodes. There are two of them. It was very interesting. Not only could Dorothy record these objects she was seeing, and sometimes the entities as well, but if she switched cameras with someone else that was not seeing these objects or entities with their naked eye, then they could not capture the images with the same camera that just worked for Dorothy. And likewise, if Dorothy takes a camera that was not working for someone who could not see them and use that camera, now that camera works when Dorothy is the one holding the camera and taking the footage. So that clearly suggests some sort of quantum entanglement between the camera and Dorothy's consciousness. And of course, not just Dorothy, but other people that are also able to record these phenomena. Again, both objects as well as supposed entities. Very fascinating, and this definitely seems to be demonstrably true. This is something we have noted in the literature. Now, in regards to the other part of the question, in terms of why is it that some people seem to have these capacities, these abilities to observe these phenomena, and then subsequently often record them as well? That's a very complex question, one that I think we're knee-deep in the weeds of in terms of trying to figure out the answer to that question. It may be multifaceted in terms of the factors that apply to why that's the case sometimes for one person and not for someone else. But from my point of view, definitely a huge aspect comes down to what these others choose, what these non-human intelligences that are manifesting these phenomena choose. It seems to be the case that these others choose some people, often from a fairly young age, sometimes as children, sometimes as adolescents, but usually by that time, according to most of the literature, these people are selected to be able to see these things and play a role in some larger, you could argue, intelligence scheme. In other words, these others have a vast scheme in mind, and that individuals play small roles within that vast scheme. In fact, this is why I don't think any of us who do experience phenomena should get too big ahead about it, because we are still small pieces of a much bigger puzzle. It's these others who understand the totality and you would assume have some sort of larger scheme in mind, some ultimate end game. However, that said, when you take the question about people experiencing phenomena that it seems anomalous or paranormal, you might say, when we think about not just the UFO phenomenon, but various aspects of the psi spectrum as well, then there is mounting evidence that these people contain certain biomarkers that can actually be tracked in our brains that suggest there is some sort of genetic component that allows some people to pick up a broader spectrum of reality than others. Right now, for instance, Gary Nolan and Jacques Vallée are doing some work on this very matter. They are putting forward a paper, trying to get it peer-reviewed by others, and hopefully we'll soon learn more about this. It's a very fascinating aspect of the phenomena, a very intriguing direction they're going in, and I, for one, very much look forward to the results that hopefully are coming soon. One final piece I'll add to that puzzle that is slowly emerging. There is also some suggestions that perhaps all of us have this dormant capacity, but that these others have the ability to flip the switch, so to speak, to turn something on inside our minds that allows us to then pick up larger aspects of reality. Perhaps it's about them doing something that allows us to drop certain filters. So it's about diminishing overactive filter, or perhaps they're actually turning something on. Either way, it may be something that is innate to all human beings, and these others have the capacity to turn something on, perhaps ultimately in each and every one of us. Okay, time for another question. This question has to do with the UFO phenomenon, and specifically the different explanatory hypotheses we put forward to explain different entities that may be involved and how they may relate to each other. The question is worded like this. If there are multiple entities involved, are they aware of each other? If so, might we be dealing with a multi-party agenda or agendas? In other words, are the interdimensionals working with or against the ETs and or the beings of light? Or might some ETs and IDs and LBs be working on one side while another group represents another side? Another very interesting question, one I'm sure most of us have given some thought to. The first point I'd like to make, just in terms of the different hypotheses, and I've discussed this in recent episodes, but I wanted to make the point again now. I think any strong delineation between these various kinds of entities, whether extraterrestrial or interdimensional or extradimensional, will undoubtedly lead to problems when forming an argument ultimately, because I think these delineations are largely illusory. They are useful at this stage in our evolution because they help us make distinctions according to how we presently understand reality. But it is almost a certainty that that view of reality is largely misguided. These terms can be useful, but they only take us so far. As I've said before, in the future, I think we'll find these different terms and the hypotheses that arise from them will collapse into something more all-encompassing. As one example, I've already discussed how any highly advanced ET species is very likely to have conquered consciousness to a degree we can barely fathom at this point, and thus they are likely operating in a kind of hyperspace. How they accomplish interstellar travel, for instance, is almost certainly via some kind of exotic travel, though travel probably isn't the right word there ultimately either. But getting to the heart of your question, I think ultimately there are likely different agendas, and these agendas are likely organized around developmental consciousness levels. In other words, the entities slash intelligences slash species operating at a high level of consciousness are very likely to share a common goal because the very way we see reality, including ourselves and others and everything else, changes as we progress through the various levels of consciousness. In other words, what is self-evident truth really changes as one progresses along the spectrum of consciousness. So rather than delineating according to interdimensionals or extradimensionals or ultra-terrestrials or extraterrestrials, I would rather delineate according to level of consciousness along this spectrum of consciousness that I've discussed before. And by the way, for those of you paying close attention, you'll probably notice the commonality between the way I answered this question, again, according to developmental lenses, that being central to the question of agendas, and how I answered the question about how different religions will respond to the notion of non-human intelligences in our midst. There also, it's less about the religion and more about the developmental lenses within those religions. All right, let's move on to another question. In a recent Calling All Beings podcast, you briefly mentioned a mass trance-like effect when trying to make sense of the ambivalence of so many people who are now certainly aware of the reality of UFOs slash UAP. I know that I am now coming at this with the evangelical fervor of a recent convert, so my experience is probably not a good measure for the rest of the population, but I am utterly dumbfounded by the apathy concerning this subject that I experience with my family, friends, and associates. Maybe it's just a matter of slow, grudging acceptance, but if the meaning to human existence can be found in these phenomena, and I think it can, then shouldn't this be the penultimate subject for all of us? Why am I obsessed when so many people of much greater intelligence than me are turning away from the issue completely? Why the utter lack of curiosity by 99% of the world's population? Is it just a matter of continued dissemination of the truth by the media and the lingering stigma? Or is this rooted in Valet's control hypothesis and you, me, and the people of UFO Twitter are somehow exempt? Another great question. Let me tackle this from a few different angles. Firstly, I would say that whenever we are engaged in an endeavor that is seeking to undermine, completely transform the current view of reality, you're going to have a lot of pushback. That is going to be like trying to turn a very, very large ship that has a lot of inertia. Inertia that's been built up over decades and decades. Those with a keen eye have noticed something they call the lure of completeness when it comes to our models of reality. And remember, for instance, a endeavor like physics is there to try and explain reality, to model reality. Now, the lure of completeness is all about our desire to feel like we are very close to understanding the totality, that we have notions of the world that pretty much answer all of the big questions. It is very disconcerting to us, very uncomfortable when we don't have those answers. Our civilization, and I'm talking about modern Western civilization, does not do well with the unknown, period. Even though in more shamanic cultures, for instance, this is a key aspect of reality and it's not even feared. But for Western civilization, the unknown is a bad word. Even in physics, there's extreme frustration when there are elements that are not yet understood. Dark matter and dark energy, which are proposed to explain huge aspects of reality, aren't really understood, but we put the notions out there anyway to give ourselves the illusion of understanding, even when it's really the emperor without any clothes, underlyingly. So that's the first thing. Whether we're talking about religion or science, or better said, scientism, in terms of how science is actually practiced in the modern world, you're going to run into very rigid dogma in both of those circles. And that's why in both of those circles, there's going to be extreme resistance to accepting these notions, because in both cases, the underlying model of reality needs to change as a result. So let's keep that in mind. Let us not underestimate what we're up against here. But that said, yes, like I also hinted at in that interview on the Calling All Beings podcast, I think there may also be some sort of mass trance-like effect going on. Now, partly we do this to ourselves because of what we talked about before, the lure of completeness. When we are comfortable with our notions of reality, when we are confident in our ability to explain reality, then we don't even pay attention to anomalous phenomena, to outliers that don't fit with that model. In fact, even scientists have to be very careful to not fall into this trap where they just ignore data that doesn't fit a preconceived notion. So what I'm saying is, to some degree, the trance-like effect, the mass trance-like effect, is self-induced. I really do think this happens. But in addition to that, it may very well be the case that because disclosure in a mass and sudden way is actually dangerous because of its vastly destabilizing revelations, for instance, entire economic structures will be turned on their head overnight. Again, meaning-making structures like scientific materialism for some people or religion for other people will again be turned on its head by these revelations. That being the case, for the others that are actually concerned with helping us ascend to this new reality, but in a way that will be helpful to our society while minimizing the potential destabilization, I think that a mass trance-like effect may be being induced by them in order to control this process, to manage disclosure so that they can help us grow into and grow up to this new understanding of reality. Okay, time for another question. What are your thoughts on Tom DeLonge's belief that ETs have been manipulating humans to have us fight each other over religious differences? In my humble opinion, this would be an odd way for an advanced race to expend resources, like Nobel laureates watching dogfights. Now, this particular question is one I'm happy to address, because I've given a lot of thought to this, and because, of course, as I've said many times before, religious studies is my background, one of them. So I have much to say about this particular matter. Human beings have historically shown a remarkably dogged ability and tendency to divide based on notions / concepts about reality, especially metaphysical ones, since the beginning of time. In other words, we do this all on our own already. So I'm skeptical of the notion that these others, or some of them, are directly controlling us with these direct implantation of religious ideas. Now, if you want to discuss more indirect causes of divisions, sure, then various experiences with the phenomenon throughout history led to interpretations that subsequently led to disagreements and divisions. But again, that's only an indirect level of influence. And to be clear, I don't think it's this more indirect kind of influence that Tom DeLonge is referring to. In fact, I'd like to quote from something he said regarding these matters. Tom DeLonge has said, quote, "Why did they land and have this guy create a religion? And then the same interesting ones landed on this continent and had this guy create a religion that said different shit," unquote. I mean, that quote, I think, says it all. Tom is speaking as if the creation of religions is almost as simple as non-human intelligences landing, speaking to a human being, giving them some ideas, and these ideas and this initial incident becomes the sum total of the new religion to a large degree. And that what they've done is they've done that with one person, and then they went to a different continent, gave a different bunch of ideas to a different individual who then very literally took those ideas and formed a religion. And now you have these two different religions in conflict because of a very direct implanting of deliberately contradictory ideas by these others to two completely different human populations. In other words, with the specific intention to spawn two new but contradictory religions to inspire ongoing centuries-long conflict between two different human groups. Now, just to be clear, my qualm with what Tom is saying is not in regards to the fact that the phenomenon may have inspired our different religions. I think it's quite likely they have. What I'm taking issue with is Tom's simplistic notion about how religions are formed to begin with, and therefore with how these others could have directly controlled our ongoing conflict as a result. Realistically, historically, what happens is, yes, an individual often is the beginning impetus for a new religion, but that religion goes through a long, complex, and evolving state of affairs before it becomes the kind of religion that we might practice today. Frankly, it is ahistorical, in other words, not accurate from a historical point of view, to suggest religions are started in these very simplistic ways. What religions become is the sum total of a very complex and long process that happens over centuries. And for instance, for a religion like Christianity, various councils that were held long after the time of Jesus, for instance, who was the impetus for this particular religion, that ultimately determined things like canon, in other words, what books would be included in the Bible and which books would be considered heretical. This was decided hundreds of years after the time of Christ, and yet these councils in many ways determined the future course for that entire religion. And then from there, you had multiple divisions on top of that based on future councils, future divisions, future cultural disagreements, and whatnot. So again, it becomes clear very quickly for anyone who has a historical understanding of how these things progress that Tom's notion of how these others may have sowed division with this very simplistic landing and talking to one individual, again, is not accurate, is not realistic, is not historical. One last point I would like to make pertaining to this particular question is regarding the fact that most of the division that we think about when we think about religious strife, religious conflict that has occurred over the last 2,000 years has been between groups like Islam and Christianity. And both of these groups come from the very same seed. So it's not even historically accurate to say that one major religion that was one of the actors in the division we've seen happened on this continent when aliens landed and talked to somebody, and the other religion was on this other continent when somebody else was talked to and given different ideas. That doesn't apply when we think about, for instance, Islam and Christianity. These are both Abrahamic religions. In other words, they both trace their history back to the figure of Abraham. So what Tom's saying about two different figures being the historical impetus for these religions isn't even accurate when we think about the actual strife that has existed in this world over the last 2,000 years. These religions, of course, are not the only ones that have been in conflict over the last couple millennia, but that is a major part of the strife. And it doesn't line up at all with what Tom is suggesting in terms of what actually happened and what ultimately spawned the future divisions that have been a major part of the conflict we've all experienced, endured, and seen over the last 2,000 years. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. I want to thank each of you who submitted a question for today's podcast. I wish I could have gotten to all of them, but that would have taken hours. In the end, I chose questions not just that were good, because there were plenty that were very good, but I chose questions for which I thought I had something important, interesting, and somewhat pertinent to say. I hope you found the same. I definitely look forward to hosting more of these, the Inquiring Mind question and answer format podcast, in the not too distant future. But for now, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.